My name is Gloria Baker, and my husband and I are here at Holden Village for 1 year. And when I'm not teaching sessions on ministry of the laity, I am serving as the village secretary. We will be through the 1st of June next year. I'd like to ask you, first of all, how many of us are changing? I see lots of hands. How are we changing? Getting older.
And wiser.
And wiser, great.
And better.
And better. How else are we changing?
Not so rigid.
Not so rigid. Are we more flexible than we were when we were younger?
Not physically, but mentally.
Yes.
Okay. What are some good kinds of change? And we just heard one, flexibility. It's certainly a good kind of change, isn't it? What are some other good kinds of change?
More accepting.
Accepting? What
more
else?
More accepting, not just
more accepting. Okay. More accepting, more flexible. What else?
Learning to let God take over.
Learning to let God take over.
It takes years.
In a word, is that trust in God? More trust?
More trusting, yeah.
Depending on.
What else?
More understanding.
Understanding?
Mm-hmm. More empathetic.
Empathetic?
Less judgmental. I suppose that goes with acceptance.
Yeah, less judgmental. I would say that's acceptance, but we can put that down too.
I find myself being judgmental when I really don't want to be at all, but I mean, beginning to notice it, and I think that's a good sign.
More awareness, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
You've got more experience.
Anything else?
That's it, more experience.
Experience, yeah. Okay.
Doing a great job on the board, but I would want to hurry along.
Relaxed, be another.
Relaxed, more relaxed. Some good kinds of change.
Sensitivity.
Isn't that great? More sensitive. Okay, we've got quite a list of good changes. What are some bad changes?
Less flexible.
Now, I'm not going to go through the list and put less where the more is. What things happen to us that are bad? What changes happen to us that we don't like?
Our bodies are
probably physical.
Physical?
Yeah,
physical. Aging.
Can't get rid of the forgetfulness.
Forgetfulness. What other things happen to us that we have no control over, that are changes in our lives? We really don't like.
Loss
of money.
Too little.
Death. What causes too little money?
Retirement
can be negative then. Other things that happen to us that we don't like.
Less fears.
Fears caused by?
All of those.
Okay, fear.
Changes in the world. The way things are.
Changes in the world. The things that happen around us economically and technically.
Our young people have too many things to cope with these days. So we have a lot of fear.
Should we put worldly changes?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a pretty good list of things that we really don't like to see happen, isn't it? I want to read you part of Leo Basgaglia's column in the newspaper that he had one day, and I liked it so well I clipped it for future use. He says, You must change if you want to continue living. I found that the only certainties in life are death and change. One is an end, the other a beginning. Change is life. Without change, there would be no growth, no understanding, no relating, and no surprises. We are, by nature, changing beings. Still, we seem to fear and resist, if more than any other aspect of life. Healthy human beings welcome the opportunity to adapt to new experiences. In fact, they're quite comfortable in a constant state of change. They are alive to the possibility of becoming someone new each moment. Only habit and apathy prevent the rest of us from having the same outlook. When we resign ourselves to patterns and routines, we begin to stagnate. We are prone to accept the comfortable illusion that life is a series of habits and conditioned responses. In actuality, this is a comfort more like a disease, which leads us to a kind of intellectual and emotional death. We allow ourselves and a dynamic world to go to waste. Novelist Ellen Glasgow said, "The only difference between a rut and a grave is their dimensions." Think of that. The only difference between a rut and a grave is its dimensions. To accept new ideas and give up old values and habits is not always comfortable. It is easier for us to deny that there may be more appropriate, more creative possibilities in our lives. We fail to understand that when we resist these potentialities, life becomes, at best, a continual struggle. At worst, it passes us by and we are left alone. Most of us have heard it said that some people will never change, that they can't change for one reason or another. It's a familiar litany, but utter nonsense. Until our brain has stopped functioning, change is always possible. It is a choice that need not be wrenching or threatening. Adapting to life's currents is a natural process. A few years ago, my next-door neighbor, who was in his 70s, was served an ultimatum by his children. His desire to find a new life after the death of his wife of many years was an impossible dream and must be abandoned. "You're too old and set in your ways to change now," they told him. Perhaps they felt it was time for him to collect his memories instead of changing or charging on to new ones. Happily, my friend was wise enough not to listen. His family was shocked when they heard that he had gone dancing at some local recreation center. They were appalled when he met a lovely lady and decided to remarry. "There's no fool like an old fool," they told him. "You're going to know nothing but misery." This man died 3 years later. Happily, while on a wonderful trip to New York, a city he'd never seen but had always wanted to, he fell peacefully smiling into the arms of his wife. Of course, the new, the untested, the uncertain cause their share of anxiety, but any change is better than none, and most change is for the better. It has the power to uplift, to heal, to stimulate, surprise, open new doors, bring fresh experience, and create excitement in our lives. It elevates us from mediocrity and saves us from false security. Certainly, it is worth the risk. It is only through change that we can continue to experiment with ourselves and our lives. Change also causes us to alter our perceptions so that we never get locked into our opinions and feelings about each other. We may find that Cousin Fred, who has always been a crashing bore, or our neighbor who is standoffish, have changed one day. Or perhaps it is we who have changed in how we perceive them. When we find that life is a bore, that existence is a chore, that the wonder and magic of being alive is vanishing, it is possible that it is because we are resisting change. If we have become trapped in a dull, lifeless rhythm, we must resolve to give up our resistance and dance to a new step. When we do, we will discover that change is our greatest source of happiness, stimulation, and continued growth. How many of you tried something new lately? Great. How many of you have tried something new at Holden Village that you haven't done before? Great. Was it stimulating? Good. What was it?
Trying to learn to tap.
Learning to tap. Good.
Was
others?
It stimulating?
It's like an old practice.
I'm just starting.
Knitting? I see someone knitting. Is that a new thing for you? Great. What about others? Is
this housekeeping.
You're doing housekeeping.
Right.
And that's new?
At Holden,
it's new.
Yeah.
Yeah, I discovered that when I was on dish team. The pots are this big. I've never had to wash one like that before. It was like a bathtub. How about your loom? Is that your first experience on the loom?
It was my second one this week, but it's a sweet one. Yeah.
Great, great.
What you
need? A belt.
Other new things at Holden or in the recent past that you've tried?
I learned to swim this summer.
You learned to swim this summer. What a good feeling.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially if there was water in the pool.
No more fear of the water.
That's great. Yeah. Anything else that you have learned lately?
I'm trying to work into writing.
Good.
In the last couple of years.
That's wonderful. How's it going?
Well, slow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going, speeding up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Does relearning count?
Sure. Sure. What are you relearning?
Well, I relearned I could play piano last night. Well, I put my hand on the router and I thought I could bang out the old tunes, but I managed to get it right when you got young kids out of the way.
Wonderful. How many of us learned to play the piano when we were kids and we haven't touched it for years? Isn't that sad? I'm one of those with my hand up. Have you thought about trying again?
I try in my basement occasionally, but little by little I get a little farther on a particular song.
Oh, good. Yeah. Sometimes we're afraid. We're so brave when we're kids because we know nobody's going to put us down for anything. Everybody encourages us to learn new things. When we get older, we think people are going to put us down if we don't do it wonderfully the first time, and so we just don't do it, do we? Or it's a real risk when we're older to learn how to swim because that's admitting that we didn't learn when we were little like everybody else. Yeah. How many of you have taken trips lately that were new and exciting? Yeah. My dad's 78 years old, and he decided this was the year he was going to drive to the North Pole as far as he could drive.
Wow.
And he's only 78. You know, no biggie. Yeah. So off he went. He wanted to be there on the longest day of the year so he could see the sun not go down. And he did it.
And
it went. No, my stepmother was with him, and my sister also went with him. But it was a long drive, and they have a big camper, so I'm glad my sister went. Because even though you're 78 years young, you still need to be a little cautious, I think. So she did help drive.
Did they go to Barrow?
Yeah, they went toward Point Barrow as far as they could possibly go. And he sat in his lawn chair and wanted to see the sun not go down. You did it too?
No, I didn't drive.
You didn't drive, yeah. Well, driving, it was an ambitious journey, but nothing stops him. I'd like you to take a few minutes now and relax. If you're familiar with my classes, we like to go on little journeys, and we're going to do that again today. I want you to go back in time to the first major change you can remember, the first time that you remember a humongous change in your life, whether it was a good one or a bad one, or what seemed to be bad or good at the time. Think about that change. Identify it. Now remember who it involved. If it was your family, or if it was some friends, or if you were all by yourself. And the feelings that you had about that change. They could have been good feelings, or bad feelings, or mixed feelings. But see if you can identify those feelings. And the results of the change. the reason for the change, and the result of the change. What was the result? Now I'd like you to come back to today, to this minute, and share your story with a neighbor. And if you're sitting by a spouse, use a different neighbor, because your spouse probably already knows your story, and we'll get acquainted with someone new this way. And we'll take about the next 5 or 6 minutes to share your stories, and be good listeners so that both of you get a chance to share. And share some of our stories. Major change that you can remember as far back as you can go. Anybody?
Marriage.
That certainly is a change, isn't it?
Horrible change.
Feeling that goes along with that change.
Horror.
Horror, you say?
Fear.
Fear.
Oh, never.
Okay, what are yours?
Closeness.
Closeness.
Mm-hmm. Happiness.
Being loved.
Happiness.
Exactly.
First time I've been.
Horror. Big change. Major changes, there are good points and bad points, negatives and positives. And what determines whether it's a positive feeling or a negative feeling, usually?
Whether you can handle it or not.
Whether you can handle it or not.
Whether your own attitude.
That's right. Your own attitude.
Your own attitude has a lot to do with how you deal with change.
Right.
It doesn't do away with the feelings, but at least you can handle the feelings a little better. There are six stages of change. The first is shock. I don't believe it. Job loss, you're firing me, I'm losing my job, you don't have space for me anymore. Shock, I don't believe it. After shock comes anger. We have to blame it on someone else. Most every kind of change, if it's a negative change in our lives, following shock is anger. Have to blame somebody because we can't yet deal with it ourselves. After we're angry, we get guilty. What did I do? What did I do wrong? Why are you doing this to me? What did I do? And after guilt comes displacement. Well, that change is okay for you, but leave me out of it. It's not for me. It's okay for you, but not me. I'm not going to change. The fifth step is questioning. Is that really true? When we get to the questioning part, that means we're willing to listen. Is it really true? And somebody tells us yes. And then we accept it. Okay.
These are the same six steps that they give you for accepting the death.
That's right.
For accepting what?
The death.
Grief?
Grieving, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. I got it from somewhere else, but yeah, I'm sure. Grief is definitely, death is definitely a form of change. Probably one of the worst.
And if you don't go through the book, if you don't go through all of these in the grieving process, you can't heal.
Exactly. And sometimes you flip back and forth. These six happen, but sometimes you get to step three and you go back to the anger. And you go back down to questioning. And then you get angry again. And you get guilty. And then you think you're going to accept it and you're back to guilt. Eventually you work it through. And the acceptance finally comes. And then you say, okay, and I can move on in my life. How many of you have experienced that? Have you been able to recognize the steps? To recognize them and understand it really helps, doesn't it? Because for a while, we don't think we should be feeling those things. And people tell us. Some people have a hard time ministering by saying, oh, don't feel that way. We have to feel that way. That's part of the process. Now, there are other ways people avoid change, and that's by giving excuses. Raise your hand if you've heard someone say, oh, we tried that before, and it didn't work, so we can't do it again. This place is different. It doesn't work like that. It costs too much money. That's not my job. It's too radical to deal with. We're too busy to do that.
That's the way we've always done it before.
That's the way we've always done it before. We don't have the time. Don't bother me now. I don't have time. Let's make a market research test first. Our plant is too small for that, or our situation. We don't have the size to do that, to implement that. The rest of the people will never buy it. We've never done it before. I don't have the authority. Sorry. Let's get back to reality. You're right, but... And there's a host of reasons given. We don't have the money, equipment, room, or personnel. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. Let's give it some more thought. All of these are often used excuses for not dealing with a change that needs to be made or that needs to be dealt with. I don't see the connection. It won't work here. Let's all sleep on it. It's too much trouble to change. It's impossible. I know a fellow who tried it and it didn't work for him. Lots of excuses. Maybe you know some others.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Right. Right. Another good one. Anybody else have an excuse?
You don't understand.
You don't understand. Good.
We're too old for that.
We're too old for that. Good. Or we're too young for that. Or in church, let the young people do it now. I had my time.
Well, women don't do that. Nice
right.
Don't do that.
Right.
Ladies don't. Do that.
Right. Nice people don't do that. What are some reasons for excuses? People generally do. They're coming from somewhere with their excuses. And some of the reasons for resistance is, you know, pretty obvious. If the purpose of the change isn't clear, you know, if you don't explain why you want to do the change, of course, some people are closed-minded and don't even want to hear any of that. But when the purpose isn't clear, it's difficult to affect change. When the persons affected by the change are not involved in the planning for the change, how many times have you been sprung? Something been sprung on you. Hmm? The new green hymnal. You didn't have a say in that.
I heard of one congregation, our church president, our congregational president, was telling us that she heard of this instance where they definitely didn't want the new hymnal, but they sent out their old hymnals and put green covers on them.
That's pretty good. Did they ever use the new green one? The other thing you could do is take the new one and put the red cover on it. When an appeal for change is based on only personal reasons and not for the good of all, there's resistance then. When there is fear of failure, and we talked about that already, there's resistance to change. If we fear the failure that might come. When excessive work pressure is involved, if we are excessively overworked, we're not going to want to deal with a new thing, are we? When the cost is too high and the reward is inadequate. Have you ever done a cost plus analysis when you've thought about changing something and you have a list of the good things that'll come from it and a list of the bad things that might come from it? And if the bad list outweighs the good list, it might be a little too high a price to pay for the change. And so you kind of back off. When the anxiety over job security is not relieved by the change, we resist the change. When there is lack of respect or trust in the initiator of the change. Someone wants to change something in our lives and we don't really trust or respect that person. There's no way they're going to influence our lives.
Tax reform.
Tax reform.
How often do you trust tax reform?
Right. When there is satisfaction with the status quo. When we're comfortable and happy, we're not particularly interested in changing, are we?
I'd like to bring up something here. I think it affects some of the older people that I have known that this has happened to, but I know that there was one mother who, I think she had something wrong with her leg or something, so she had to go to a nursing home for a while, but she still had an apartment in that same building.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she went up one day to go back home, and the children, while she had been in the nursing home, had sold all of her. And I mean, you know, that's just system. She was in shock, and boy.
Yeah. When you have no involvement in the change. It's horrendous. How sad. How can you deal with resistance to change in people? What are the ways, the positive ways, to deal with that so that people don't resist change? Or are they learn how to deal with it effectively?
Education.
A trusting work climate, if it's on the job. Or a trusting climate with the individual.
Allow for good input.
Allow the person to have part of the process, involved in the process of the change.
And then have the patience of Job.
And the patience of Job. Wonderful. Letting the people know the reason for the change ahead of time. The why. It's perfectly normal for children to say why. And we say, don't ask me why. Just do it.
Too busy now.
We're too busy to tell you now. How sad. They're just people wanting to know the reason. If somebody wanted you to do something, you'd say why. And because you're an adult, you'd expect a reasonable answer, wouldn't you? But how many times do we say to children, just because they're children, don't ask me why, just do it. And we get defensive about having to explain reasons to children. And yet they're just smaller people. And it's sad when we don't treat them like people. Exactly. And we overestimate some adults' capabilities, don't we? Provide adequate motivation. People need to be motivated to change. So you help them be motivated. What was that?
There's some people you can never motivate. I get a hard time.
They need to read this article over and over and put it under their pillow, don't they? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. If the cost is higher than the benefits, forget it.
Or if you're trying to make somebody change. Mm-hmm. If the change is necessary, it might be all right to discuss what happens if you don't change.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Good point. And making only the essential changes. You know, don't make change just for change's sake. So deal with essential change. Steps in doing this begin with defining what the situation is that needs the change. First, you define what it is, the problem or situation that warrants changing, and collect ideas from people, involve them in it. Then test out the idea. Will it work? And then make the decision on whether it's worth it or not. Then you plan what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And again, you involve the people who are involved, who will be involved in the change itself. Then do it. Make the change and assess the consequences. What happened? You know, was it worth it? Do we need to go back? And then, what are the new problems or situations that result from the change? And you start all over again. So you're always redefining. Redefining your lives, redefining your jobs, redefining your relationships. So there are all kinds of changes. Behavioral change is essential in all of it. To deal with behavioral type changes in relationships, a good way to do that is to simply identify the facts. Something happens, it's not something good that happens. So, how do you deal with it? What are the facts? What actually happened? The story. What are the feelings that go with that? I feel, however, terrible when that happens. So what can I do next time?
You can
can only deal with I. We can't change anybody else, can we? We can only deal with I. So next time, I will try or will do da-da-da. Does that make sense? Let's take an example, perhaps. My teenage daughter came home too late. That's the fact. The feeling was I was scared and pissed because I lost sleep and anxious. Next time, what will I do? What could I do?
Explain why you're expecting something of her.
Mm-hmm. Talk it over with her more beforehand to make clear that she can indeed meet the situation. You know, you can't have unreasonable or unreasonable expectations of the timing there either. You have to be sure that the time that you expect is a reasonable and practical time. So I need to talk to her more about it next time. Get a different kind of understanding. Can you think of situations in your lives where the facts maybe weren't clear? And of course, in that situation, if the facts aren't clear, the expectation can't be met as well. Oftentimes, if we're angry, we can't deal with our feelings, which we need to do. We need to express how we feel about the problem because that helps the person to change, doesn't it? Can you think of a time in your life when this kind of exercise would be helpful to follow?
Well, at least once or twice a day.
Really, at least.
That's what living is all about.
Yeah.
Did you all anybody that you're
with. Right.
You meet somebody new just here and you say, would you like to go for a hike? And then you forget to say just where you'll meet them or what time. Mm-hmm. And you think, I guess they didn't like me. You know,
and you're disappointed and hurt. And,
yeah.
And next time you will make sure it's understood where to meet and when to meet. And,
oh, yeah.
Right. Good. Now, there are lots of ways to affect change. Now, maybe you've known people who tried to affect change in rather bad ways. For instance, the authoritarian boss says, do it my way. We've all known people like that. And then there's the one that doesn't give a hoot and says, let him do it, which is about the opposite, isn't it? If he wants to change, go ahead, go in. Don't bother me. And another way is let God do it. You know, God, if God wants it to change, it'll change. And then there's the little red hen that says, no one will help me do it. And so the martyr bit comes into play. You all know people like that, I'm sure. And then there's the person that says, if you don't do it the way I want to change it, then we won't change it at all. And then there's the person that says, let's all do it together. And that's kind of neat. So there are ways to change, and we have to be careful how we do that. Now, there are some little tidbits that I'll mention here. Some things that have to do with attitude. It's not what happens to us that counts, as we talked about. It is how we handle it that determines our well-being. What is your attitude about things? Are you positive? Do you complain because the roses have thorns? Or do you rejoice because the bushes have blooms? Winners are people who deal with change very effectively. They are successful in their own potential. But losers don't deal with change very well. They see what they don't want to see. They're afraid of making mistakes. Openness is another attitude of change, a good attitude. Being open. If you are a functional person, I'll be open to you and nobody will lose. We will both be winners because I will be open to you and I expect you to be open to me because I'm a positive thinker. But if we are dysfunctional, I'll wait my turn, I'll be patient, but in the end, I know it all and I'll do it my way and you're gonna lose. And I'm gonna win. Not too great. You are doing exactly what you want to do at all times. Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it will achieve. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you are always right. Let me do that again. You are doing at all times exactly what you want to be doing. Think about that.
Who said? Hmm? I said, who said? I would question that.
Okay. Let's hear what you mean by...
Well,
when are you doing something you don't want to do?
A lot of times.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's still altruism argument. Some people say there isn't anything such thing as altruism, that you're always doing, just as you said, exactly what you want to do. I'd rather think not.
Okay. Can you give me an example of any time that you were doing something you did not choose to do?
Oh, yeah. I chose to do it.
Okay.
It's something that's distasteful to me. But I will do it because there is, I suppose, an overriding. I'm thinking right now, I do the Cancer Crusade to ask. I detest asking people for money. And
but what do you get from doing it?
Well, the satisfaction of...
So you wanted to do it because it's satisfying, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Okay, the statement again is... You are doing exactly what you want to do at all times.
Take that word "want" out. Put "choose." You are doing what you choose to do all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a difference?
Want means you like it.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. I want to do it for a variety of reasons. I want to do it because I want to make the other person look bad. I want to do it because. I want to be a martyr. There's lots of reasons for wanting to do things. Or I want to do it because I am doing it because it's makes me feel good. I get satisfaction. It's
or
something.
You need a clean toilet.
Yeah. I want to please others with a clean toilet. Yeah.
Can't you do something because somebody told you to do it and you can't think of any reason at the moment why? You really don't want to do it, but you haven't got a better idea to hold.
But you do it because you want to do it, or you wouldn't do it. Whether it's to satisfy the other person or not.
To a degree, I used to go into nursing, like I did pediatric nursing, and that I liked, but you had a certain array of assignments, and we had an acute care, so things change rapidly. You might start out with 3 patients and you're doing fine. The new one would come in and you have to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't exactly that you wanted to, but the system wouldn't work. You know, if everybody said, I insist on keeping my same 3, or I want the same kids I took care of last week and all. We did a lot of carry-through assignments, but it just didn't always work out.
But you did that because... You responded in a sense of duty then, didn't you? So you wanted to.
Right. And your paycheck depended on it, probably.
Well, otherwise you would have quit.
It did, except that you've got a tight-knit group, you know, that was real flexible. And had to be on that unit more so than others.
But your underlying need...
You could be changing constantly all day long. Mm-hmm.
But your underlying desire to please other people and to do a good job and to be part of the team, that was the, it seems to me, must have been the underlying desire that caused you to do that.
Right. And, so there were some days when you had more difficult or more harder situations.
Tell them like your word locked.
Yeah.
It's not my word.
No, you're doing something out of fear of the consequences or to escape the consequences.
And that causes you to want to do it. Right?
Very reluctantly.
Right. Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure. We can put the word reluctantly in there if that'll help. But think about it. There is nothing you do out of, you know, because of any other reason except wanting to do it. You are doing exactly what you want to do at all times. And if you think you can't, you can't. And if you think you can, you can. Whatever you think is right. Because we are in control. Sentimental or emotional attachment often keeps us from changing. All meaningful and lasting change begins first in our imagination and then works its way out to reality. Let me say that again. All meaningful and lasting change starts first in our imagination and works itself out to reality. How many of you can relate to that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alana?
I can
Do you want to give an example?
Coming to Holden Village.
Coming to Holden Village.
And working here was kind of a fantasy I had for 2 years before I came.
Mm-hmm. It all starts in the imagination. First, we have to image ourselves doing something.
In your job or something where you don't like the way something is being done. Mm-hmm. You think about it. It begins in your imagination.
For
so
sure.
It comes out to a new procedure.
For sure.
It may or may not be accepted, but that begins in your mind.
Mm-hmm. We have to perceive it in our mind and visualize and imagine and let it germinate there, don't we?
But what about the changes that hit you unexpectedly that you have no, that from the outside you have no control over, as death or an accident? You don't have time to image. You just have to react. And
that's right. That's why we go into shock. Because we haven't yet had the time to go through the process to the last step of acceptance. And acceptance means we can finally visualize the change. Finally can see it in our mind. Mm-hmm. That's right. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. Do you remember when, way back when ERA was new and the changes were going to be very scary for a lot of people, or they thought there was going to be a lot of change, and some were hoping there would be a lot of change. Irma Bombeck, whom I just love, wrote about ERA. She says her name is ERA with an M, speaking to a woman in communications convention in November 1980. So she's ERA with an M in the middle. I tell women that although the ERA has nothing to do with restrooms, the only thing women have to fear from unisex bathrooms is that they'll still be cleaning them. I tell them equality is not a state's issue. Why women in New York or California enjoy equal pay for work of comparable value, while I sit in Arizona waiting for legislators to come out of their coma. And they say that equal opportunity is not a state issue. I tell women that men are not the enemy. We need them. Many men are perplexed and puzzled. We must address ourselves to how all this has affected them and how we all live together with our freedom intact. In talking about the draft, I ask women if they love their daughters any more than they love their sons. I tell women that without the 27th Amendment, we have no recourse, no status, indeed, no proof of our legal existence. That was Irma talking about the ERA, which I think is still not passed, right? Another story about caterpillars. Processionary caterpillars. We in the church will appreciate that. Processionary caterpillars feed upon pine needles. They move through the trees in a long procession, one leading the other following, each with his eye half closed and his head snugly fitted against the rear extremity of his predecessor. And you just see caterpillars in a circle like this, following each other around the circle. Jean-Henri Fabre, the great French naturalist, after patiently experimenting with a group of these caterpillars, finally enticed them to the rim of a large flower pot where he succeeded in getting the first one connected up with the last one. You can imagine that around the edge of this circle. Only it was a flower pot instead of this fireplace. Thus forming a complete circle which started moving around in a procession which had neither beginning nor end, just all attached around the circle. The naturalist expected that after a while they would catch on to the joke, get tired of their useless march, and start off in some new direction. But not so. Through sheer force of habit, the living, creeping circle kept moving around the rim of the flower pot, around and around, keeping the same relentless pace for 7 days and seven nights. That's also biblical, isn't it? And would doubtless have continued longer had it not been for sheer exhaustion and ultimate starvation. Incidentally, an ample supply of food was close at hand and plainly visible, but it was outside the range of the circle, so they continued along the beaten path, avoiding the food. They were following instinct, habit, custom, tradition, precedent, past experience, quote-unquote standard practice, or whatever you may choose to call it, but they were following it blindly. They mistook activity for accomplishment. They meant well, but they got no place. The bottom line is, don't be like the caterpillar. Don't be like the average human. Accept change and accept opportunity. Just for today, I will try to live through the day only and not set far-reaching goals to try to overcome all my problems at once. I know I can do something for 12 hours that would appall me if I felt that I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. Abraham Lincoln said, most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. He was right. I will not dwell on thoughts that depress me. I will chase them out of my mind and replace them with happy thoughts. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is. I will face reality. I will try to change those things I can change and accept those things I cannot change. Just for today, I will try to improve my mind. I will not be a mental loafer. I will force myself to read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in three ways. I will do a good deed for somebody without letting them know it. If they find out I did it, it won't count. I will do at least two things I know I should do, but have been putting off. I will not show anyone my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk softly, act courteously, and speak ill of no one. Just for today, I'll try not to improve anybody except me. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it, thereby saving myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will find at least 10 minutes to relax alone. During this time, I will reflect on my behavior and will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. I will gather the courage to do what is right and take the responsibility for my own actions. I will expect nothing from the world, but I will realize as I give to the world that the world will give to me. Any questions about... the list.
You just read it.
Oh, I don't know where it came from. Would you like one?
Why don't you run it off?
Okay, I'll make some copies.
And yeah, we can cross off the ones we don't want to do. But this is about being heard, you know. I'm just now learning to let people know that I'm heard.
Mm-hmm.
So that one I would not want to do.
Right. Okay. Any other questions?
Great.
Good. Any other comments, questions? Yes?
Have you ever looked, please understand me?
I think so.
Personality, temperament types.
Mm-hmm.
And this bit of change, my husband and I are not the same temperament type. I like closure. He wants to keep looking. And when it comes to making a decision on a change, that's difficult. So some of this it has to be tempered with that sort of thing, especially if you're working with a partner.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this fits your situation, but if you can deal with the facts of the situation, what are the facts involved, about what the change might be? And I don't understand just exactly what you mean, but
that was what I was going
and the feelings
in my head. The next time I will,
mm-hmm.
I'm still going to have to deal with the fact that Chester just will not make a decision right now.
Mm-hmm. He'll, it takes him time.
He'll just let it simmer until
mm-hmm.
it has to be done, and then
okay.
then we'll make
yeah.
the decision.
At that point,
I love it, man.
Yeah. At that point, yeah. At that point, you might want to ask him, what is hampering the decision? Can you give me some? And maybe if he can talk about what's keeping him from making a decision, he'll talk himself into making one. But if you deal with his indecision first, the fact is he can't decide, and the feelings that you have are probably frustration and anxiety. See what his feelings are. And what can he do next time if he's willing to do something different too? But I can understand what you're saying, yeah.
We deal with the same situation in our family, except it's just the opposite. I'm the one who likes to look at all the angles. I have to know that this is going to be the best possible decision that we can make. Whereas Russ doesn't. He can make the decision and the change right away. But he learned pretty early on in our relationship that if he put out some feelers and suggestions without specifically saying this is a change or these are some things we have to decide on, lo and behold, by the time the decision needed to come about, I'd already thought about it, I'd already toyed with it, I'd already come up with the possibilities, and so when that date, the decision needed to be made, we were able to make it. But he didn't come, he learned that he couldn't come right out and say, okay, we've got to talk about this today, we have to make a decision. And he put out feelers, he put out...
It just takes a little more time. Linda talked in the session this morning that she had on differences about people, two different types of people, and perceptive persons are, they don't like to close off possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what making a decision is, and they like to keep open.
Mm-hmm.
And Connie's mm-hmm. that way. I mean, she's more spontaneous than I am,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not quite able to keep that open. But I guess we've accepted it
mm-hmm.
in each other
mm-hmm.
and learned to live with it.
Sometimes going through the cost-promise exercise, what are the costs of making this change, and what are the promises, and see how long each list is.
Right.
And that gives you both the same amount of thinking time, and you kind of can do that together. Sometimes that helps too, but...
One way to beat the whole system is to just go ahead and do it, so you want to do it mid-tell.
If it doesn't have to involve anyone in, yeah. If it doesn't have to involve anyone else, that's fine, but people involved need to be considered.
I used to be able to do that before I was married, but it doesn't work now.
Yeah, because there are other people
involved.
To consider, right, other people involved. Yes?
Don't you think age has something to do with this uncertain feeling that we go through sometimes?
Do you want to say a little more about that?
Well, in my case, I used to be able to make decisions, you know, just very quickly. But now, since I'm alone, I feel very insecure, and I think that has, and it's hard for me to make decisions now.
So you're more cautious.
Very much so.
Did it have to do with economics?
A lot of it.
Okay.
Getting older.
I think it's mostly due to economics. If you don't have as much money, of course you're going to think lots longer about spending. Is that one of the primary?
Yes, that's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to maintain things and do the things that need to be done, and
you probably every time you have a major outlay need. Would go through a cost and a promise list and see, you know, these are going to be the benefits, but the cost is outweighs it, so I'll rethink that and maybe not do it. Whereas maybe when you're younger and have more access to money,
two incomes,
and you can kind of carelessly spend and not think twice about it.
Well, yeah. I know that because I'm still in business, and just recently one of my daughters has decided to come in, and I've rented them all these years by myself, but we needed new vans. And I have been a whole year making that decision for the simple reason that I've had some bad experience being a woman alone buying an automobile. And since I needed several, I wanted the best buy I could have, so I just kept, you know, putting off. And I knew in my heart that I should buy those new vans because the old vans was costing me money. But I would not make that decision because it was a lot of money. And another thing, I couldn't get what I thought I should get for buying several cars at one time. So I was a whole year and how many? Seven proposals from automobile dealers. And I think about 125 automobile dealers to deal with. And it was just a mess for a whole year. And I don't know why I didn't do it when I knew we needed them, because you go through all of this and then you wind up doing it anyway. So I spent lots of sleepless nights, and I guess the only thing is that I got them for the price I wanted after a year. But the hassling of that whole year.
Was it worth it?
Well, yeah, when you save several thousand dollars, it's worth it. But it just burns you up because you get treated that way because you are a woman dealing. A man could have gone in and said, look, this is what I want, and this is what I'm going to pay. Now, damn it, you do it or else. But you see, you just don't do that.
Okay, next time I will what?
Next time I'll knock their block off and say, here's my check. And this is it. I want the van.
Just for today, I will not be hostile. Any others?
I want to backtrack when I said just go ahead and do it. And this is coming from the feeling of having always been a woman and a girl with three brothers, and my father was telling me what to do, and my husband always telling me what to do. And, you know, shoot, I just recently learned to do my own thing. I don't ask anybody now. I do it. And it's grand. And if they don't like it, that's their problem. And that's real liberation. And boy, they all respect me better than being a doormat.